When Graham Greene published his novel, The Power and the Glory, in 1940, his bishop informed him that the Vatican had condemned the book because it was, quote, paradoxical, and, quote, dealt with extraordinary circumstances. This is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, your host for the After Dinner Scholar. Cardinal Giovanni Montini, later Pope Paul VI, urged Vatican censors to reconsider, which they did. And years later, when Graham met the Pope, he told him, Mr. Greene, some aspects of your book are certain to offend some Catholics, but you should pay no attention to that. Over the past week, the administration and staff here at Wyoming Catholic College have met to discuss The Power and the Glory. It's a historical novel set in the 1930s in the Mexican state of Tabasco. During the Mexican Revolution, the Catholic Church was outlawed. Churches, including cathedrals, were torn down, and priests were arrested as enemies of the state, traitors, and summarily shot. In that setting, Greene gives us his paradoxical portrayal of service to God, love for neighbor, and holiness of life in the last remaining Catholic priest, a character known to us only as Father, or the Whiskey Priest. Dr. Glenn Arbery, president of Wyoming Catholic College, led the discussion and is our guest this week on the After Dinner Scholar. When it first came out, the Vatican condemned The Power and the Glory, yet 15 years later, Pope Paul VI told Greene to keep up the good work. What is it about the book that would cause these discordant responses?
Well, the principal objection, I'm sure, would be that the central character is a whiskey priest, as Greene calls him throughout the novel. He's something of an alcoholic, but that's just the beginning of his troubles. We find out about halfway through the book that he has a child from a very brief affair that he had in a village when he was about 5 years into his career as a sort of internal exile in Mexico after a priest had been formally condemned by the government. They were being sought out and killed whenever they were found. So this priest on the run, despairing at one point, has this episode that then becomes the source of his child. So there are, you know, a lot of things that don't go with, you know, what you expect priests to be. And he doesn't look very heroic, you know, for much of the book. So there's just a lot that you could point out that seems problematic. And yet there's, you know, much to redeem him as you go through the novel. And
now, in the first pages of the novel, we meet the whiskey priest and we meet the lieutenant. And the novel is, in a sense, about both of them. They're completely different, yet strangely alike. Tell us about the lieutenant and how he figures into it.
The lieutenant is a true believer. He's a Marxist-Leninist, you would assume. He thinks that Catholicism has poisoned the people, that it gives them false hopes, and that what they really need is food, what they, you know, they need the kind of support that the government that he imagines could give them. But he's a real Puritan in the way that he thinks. He has a kind of discipline. He's admirable in the clarity of his character, if you think of him as standing for something. The priest, by contrast, looks a little more slovenly. He doesn't have the clarity of outline that you can see the lieutenant having. But on the other hand, he is truly a believer in his Catholicism. And the two of them have a long kind of dance, you could almost call it, of coming close to each other, the priest not being recognized, then another session of pursuit by the lieutenant, until they finally come together in the capture, in the aftermath at the end of the novel. But they are clearly doubles of each other. The lieutenant almost gives you a picture of what the priest could have been like had he had a little more fervor and a little more moral clarity in his own life. And the lieutenant sees in the priest someone who truly does believe in the church and in God, and is, I think, by the end of the novel, moved by the revelation of his goodness.
Well, the priest is regularly caught between wanting to get away and get to safety, and at the same time staying there in what is the Mexican state of Tabasco, to run for his life for another day. What keeps him, we might say, in his parish? Why does he keep risking his life?
I think the only thing we can say when we read the novel is that it's his sense of duty to God and to the people entrusted to him. They have no other priest. Every single priest who has been in that area has been either sought out and killed or has pretty much apostatized, you know, as this man named Padre Jose does, who marries a woman that, if I might say so, seems like fit punishment for his sin. So the priest knows that he's the only chance the people have to confess their sins, to go to Mass, to be baptized. And it's that duty, I believe, that keeps him staying there, even though he has opportunities or near opportunities to escape. And it pulls him back even when he actually does escape the province itself and gets into a neighboring one. He goes back because he wants to hear a dying man's confession, and he knows he's walking right into a trap.
On more than one occasion, the priest encounters pious people, the kind of nice Catholic folks he remembers from the days before the persecution, and he doesn't like them very much. God might forgive cowardice and passion, he thinks, but was it possible to forgive the sin of piety? Yet there are others, like the mestizo, who eventually betrays him to the police, the people in the villages, his illegitimate daughter, even the lieutenant, for whom he's willing to die. What's Graham Greene telling us about piety, love, and holiness?
I think that what he means by piety, and this came up in our discussion with the staff this week about this book, is a kind of Pharisaism. It's congratulating yourself for doing what God wants, imagining that you are better than others, that you have a way of measuring them against your own righteousness. And it ends up being a kind of insulation, not only from neighbor, but from God himself. And the priest at one point thinks that, you know, piety may be, maybe not despair, but piety in the sense that it's so much of a buffering, an insulating phenomenon that, you know, is really unforgivable, especially if you harden in it, you know, and you think that, you know, your piety makes you the chosen of God, and everybody else is going to be damned or, you know, chastised, and you get to see it, something like that. the priest has very little use for, after his hardship in particular, for people like that.
What part do you think piety plays in his returning from safety? Because he's there in safety, he's going to say Mass, that's 5 pesos. He's got about 100 baptisms, that's a peso and a half each. And he's thinking to himself, well, I can buy brandy, I'll have mules, I'll ride in to the capital to see the bishop, I'll ride in style. He's fallen right back into it. Is that part of his motivation for going back?
I think he feels the unreality of sinking back into that way of life, calculating how much per sacrament, more or less, and making his living off people in that way. It strikes him after his experience as a fugitive and the dark night of the soul he has to undergo repeatedly, strikes him as false. Not that the sacraments are false, but that his way of administering them and calculating them in terms of money is deeply false, and especially after what he's been through. So yeah, I think when he's given this summons that he knows is a trap to go back and administer the sacraments to this very terrible and brutal criminal from America, he does it despite the danger it poses to him, because it's real. It's a real thing, and not this kind of false use of the church for his own benefit.
I don't think it's a spoiler to tell our audience that the whiskey priest is caught and he is killed. And after that, we're back in a home that we visited earlier in the novel, with a mom reading a story about a very pious martyr priest, in marked contrast to the rather squalid story we've been reading. Her daughters are enraptured, but her son is bored and begins to question, and yet is caught up in it just before the priest is shot. Tell us what happens next and the unexpected ending of the book.
I think that the boy, when he hears this story of the heroic martyr priest from his mother, thinks it's all just a bunch of hooey. It just strikes him as sentimental, unlikely. He likes the military heroes. He likes the kind of masculinity that appeals to him, at least temporarily, in the lieutenant, interestingly. But the end of the novel, when he realizes that the man that they harbored temporarily, who smelled like whiskey and his mother didn't think was a very good priest at the time, that this man has actually died for his faith, I think it changes him. Something happens there that makes him reconceive what heroism is. And to think that he's had a hero who's passed through his own house moves him. So that at the end of the novel, he turns against the lieutenant, he actually spits, and it hits the lieutenant's holster. So it's a kind of defiance of that way of treating things that it formerly had attracted him, the military, the force. And at the end of the novel, he's the one who goes to the door when he hears a tapping in the night and lets in this stranger who admits, as he's standing on the threshold, "I'm a priest." So out of nowhere comes this priest who doesn't even know, I suspect, that he's replacing the last priest in the province of, or the state of Tabasco. But the boy at that point hushes him, ushers him into the house. So we see a complete change
kisses
of heart.
His hand.
He kisses his hand. Yeah. That's right. Because he sees now the heroism that he hadn't been able to see before.
As the whiskey priest is in his cell, his last night on earth, he wakes up, it's the morning. Graham Greene writes, "What a fool he had been to think that he was strong enough to stay when others fled. What an impossible fellow I am," he thought, "and how useless. I have done nothing for anybody. I might just as well have never lived." So there he is on the dawn of the day he's being executed. That's his judgment upon himself. The question is he an example of heroic virtue and sainthood or not?
That's the question that we brought up this morning in our seminar. And it's a great question, I think. It's difficult to see in the character of the priest, as he thinks of himself, any kind of heroic virtue. He persists, he does what he's supposed to, but when you're looking at his own self-estimate, all you see is his awareness of his weakness and his sins. On the other hand, what we see in the course of the novel, especially toward the end, is the effect that he's had on many, many people, simply by the witness of his perseverance in being a priest when it was going to cost him his life at one point or another. And we see the fruits of that witness begin to show themselves, with the little boy at the end of the novel, with the dentist he saw at the beginning of the novel, with all these different characters. So I think, interestingly, we can't trust his self-estimate. We have to leave that to God, as it were, but we do see the good fruit that, that's come from what he's done by persisting in his priesthood.
By staying, which is exactly what he said he was a fool to think he could stay.
And he did
stay.
Right. He stayed to the very end.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you, John.
"But at the center of his own faith," writes Graham Greene about the whiskey priest, there always stood the convincing mystery that we are made in God's image. God was the parent. He was also the policeman, the criminal, the priest, the maniac, and the judge. Over the course of his life, the whiskey priest moved from seeing others as objects to fully appreciating them as the image of God, and thus those who we are to love as God loves. Hours before his execution, Green writes, he knew now that at the end there was only one thing that counted, to be a saint. Of course, he doesn't think he's a saint, but he knows it's the one thing that counts. Green's novel is a wake-up call to that simple truth. At the end, the only thing that counts is to be a saint. We're all to be saints, loving the image of God in each and every human we encounter. As we learn from the novel, that's a gritty, dirty, and sometimes dangerous business. Green's novel, as Pope Paul VI told him, contains things that some will certainly find offensive. But then again, so does all of life in this world, the world the Son of God entered to redeem. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tunkowicz.